Hello from Monitor and from Dr. Morgan. We have an interesting variety of stuff for you this half hour. A bit later, an inspiring story of an injured Navy veteran and his love of sports. A little more than 3 minutes from now, international film star Oscar Werner, on location in London, points out the charm and romance of his native town, Vienna. First, a brand new version of Step to the Rear, Elmer Bernstein's orchestra and chorus.
This is Ed McMahon. For my next act, I'm going to tell you all about a beauty product. Well, don't laugh, because I really know what I'm talking about. It's a shampoo. A really good concentrate shampoo. It's made by the Breck people. It's called Breck Concentrate, not surprisingly. And it's what you might call a family shampoo. My wife Alice found it first for us. And being concentrated, just a little goes a long, long way and makes plenty of lather. It's not a bad idea with a bunch of kids around like ours. And being Breck, it's a very good shampoo, full of conditioners and all those things. So it even suits baby fine hair like my daughter Linda's. And it's in a plastic tube, so you don't have to worry about the kids breaking it. We take it with us on the boat in summer for that very reason. And I like it because one shampoo for all of us means we don't have all those bottles cluttering up the bathroom shelf. So here's the name again. Breck Concentrate Shampoo. The McMahon Family Shampoo. You'll like it.
Ever since Oscar Werner's critical and popular success in the film Ship of Fools, the demands for his services in English-speaking parts have increased immensely. Always frank and direct, Mr. Werner says of the modern European theater of Brecht, quote, "I detest Brecht. He wants the actors just to show up. This is cabaret, not theater," end quote. On location in London, Oscar Werner has several other interesting comments about his life, past and present, as he chats with Monitor reporter John Cannon.
Oscar?
Now, you were raised in Vienna, weren't you?
Yes, I'm a real Viennese. All my four grandparents are Viennese, and I was raised there, and I would even be a member of the National Theater, called the Burgtheater. I was engaged there the first time in 1941, so I would be a member for more than 25 years.
Well, is Vienna as romantic as we think it is?
Vienna is not as schmaltzy as one thinks it is.
Viennese people do enjoy music.
I think so. This is one of the true things in Vasi Viennese.
And you? You enjoy music?
I enjoy it very much. Unfortunately, I never started, and I don't be able to play an instrument. But of course, it's a big challenge for me here to play a famous conductor, a little bit in Leonard Bernstein style or Karajan style. And I took 50 lessons to really to conduct the orchestra, and I was very proud that I achieved to conduct the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. It was quite lovely.
Let's explain to everybody that we're here in London. We're actually out to, in wide open London on location with you, Oscar, and that in interlude you play the part of an orchestra conductor.
Yes, that's right.
Now, again, about Vienna. You were in Vienna through the war, weren't you?
Not the whole time, no, but Austria did not exist, as you know, during the wartime. It was occupied by Germany and was a part of Germany. I had the doubtful honor to be in Hitler's army for 3.5 years. I only could make up for it that I was a desert in the end of it. And I was hidden in the Vienna woods, and I can tell you it had nothing to do with Johann Strauss, my tales of the Vienna woods. But thank God I survived. It's a miracle, but many had an experience like this.
And Vienna today, has it changed a great deal from the Vienna of your youth?
Everything changes. Nothing remains stable and static. Life goes on.
How about London itself? Do you enjoy it as a place to be?
But you know, this is the difficult things. I know many people envy the movie actors because they come around in the world and go to different places. You don't know when you're working, where you really are.
For instance, where we are right now talking is a most interesting place. I'm told this is the Inner Temple, which is where all of jurisprudence in England centers, isn't it?
That's almost frightening to give an interview here. You never know what will happen.
And we're in a most picturesque place because we're looking over the embankment of the Thames River. So just working, you are seeing some of the very interesting places. I was up in the Regent's Park with you the other day. Uh-huh. So maybe you see parts of towns in a more intimate way than
the natives. Well, I don't see a town. I have to remember my lines and to see how I play this scene.
There's a charming trace of old Vienna in his voice and inflections, but most importantly, there is a sincerity about what he utters, whether it be as an actor on the stage and screen or as a private man. And this makes Oscar Werner always believable to us. We've been with him here on location in London during the filming of Interlude. This is John Cannon from London for Monitor.
Burt Comfort, Margaret Whiting, Glenn Campbell, all very popular music makers, and all of them in the next 10 minutes, right here on the Monitor Beacon.
Cutting taxes and spending can be more than just a campaign promise. In the town of Oyster Bay, Ralph J. Marino has already done it twice this year. Marino, majority leader of the town board, slashed 41% of wasteful spending from the $45 million capital budget proposed by Supervisor Petito. Republican Marino also applied his cost-conscious shears to Mike Petito's 1968 operating budget. When Marino finished cutting out the fat, the budget called for over $1 million less in taxes than the 67 budget. Had enough of big government and big spending? Michael Petito used to be Nassau County's Deputy Welfare Commissioner. And you know how that department loves to spend your hard-earned money. Vote for a proven tax cutter. On November 7th, elect Republican Ralph Marino, Supervisor, Town of Oyster Bay, and give yourself a break. Paid political, Citizens for Marino and Roncalo, Edward Glazer, Chairman.
The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. It's 17 minutes after the hour, and you're back with Monitor. The casual folk style of Glenn Campbell next, and maybe someday he's going to make it to Phoenix.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. left that girl so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch and give me a call. But she'll just hear that phone keep on ringing off the wall. That phone, for the time I make Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly, call my name, my outlaw. She'll cry just to think I'd really leave her. Time and time I've tried to tell her so. She just didn't know I would really go.
The new filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. The 101. It's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A real pro among the lady singers, Miss Margaret Whiting.
We were dancing, and he laughed just like you used to. He touched my hand and held me just like you used to.
sports. In the Veterans Administration Hospital in Dublin, Georgia, is a remarkable 26-year-old man named Donald Smith, son of a retired Army colonel, who spent 30 months in the Navy in the Far East. Don was an outstanding athlete in service, but on November 7th, 1963, an automobile accident left him paralyzed from his neck to his toes. However, this remarkable young man is not through with sports. Far from it. Reporter Johnny Earp has the story from Dublin, Georgia.
Time now in the world is a fellow in a VA center on a wheelchair, coach a football team. I know it's a physical problem here, but I know mentally and you're all set to go. How do you get out to this team every day?
Well, sir, the boys out of the high school are awful good. They come and get me, and they take me out to the high school, and they help me any way I need help. This is a big thing. The boys are such a tremendous help to me.
All right, now, you say they come out and get you. You're in a wheelchair, so physically they have a problem of taking you, rolling you out in a wheelchair. Then you're put in some sort of, what, a lift, a truck of some sort?
They have a lift out there. I get in, sir, and go to the back of a pickup truck. This makes it real easy. The boys don't have to lift me all around in this pickup. Comes in handy because I can sit up there and actually coach from the pickup.
From the truck?
Yes, sir.
Well, I've heard of coaches, some of these big league coaches, being up high so that they can use a megaphone and look at all, maybe look at three or four teams practice in all parts of the field. What about, do you have a problem? How many guys do you have to worry about?
Oh, I just have 25 to worry about, sir. It's not a big problem like that. It does give me a great advantage looking over them, though, because I look down on them. I can see the execution of the blocks and the plays a lot better than if I'm on the ground.
How do these youngsters take a coach who's in a wheelchair? I'm sure they must respect you because I understand you've already won a game or so.
Oh, yes, sir. They're wonderful. I couldn't ask for a better bunch of boys. They all cling around and listen to me, and they seem to, everything I say, they take advice to and heed. They're wonderful, the boys out there. I really enjoy coaching them.
Now, they run in age from what to what, Don?
Yeah, from 10 to 13 is the age limit, sir.
What about do you play your games in daytime or at night?
Well, we play on Saturday afternoon.
What about, do those kids get over? Who gets the most excited, you or those youngsters during the game?
I can't say that. I get awful excited. They do too, sir. I think it's about a draw.
What about when you want to take a player in or out? You're directing everything from the sidelines in a wheelchair, is that it?
That's true. I just have one of the boys stand beside me, and I use him as my messenger.
Don, you had to have a military background or you wouldn't be in the VA center here in Dublin. What was your military background?
Well, first of all, I was in the Navy for 4 years, and I got out and started college and went to OCS during the summer in college.
Now, for the benefit of our monitor friends, what is OCS?
That's Officer Cannon School. This is with the Army at Fort Benning, Georgia.
And what about now? Where were you going to college?
I was going to Jacksonville State University in Jacksonville, Alabama.
And I understand you were good enough to be thinking of going to Alabama itself at some time.
Well, I don't think I was that good. I just had a great desire to play under Coach Paul Bear Bryant.
I guess he's the idol of a lot of guys.
That's true, especially in my home state, Alabama. He seemed like to be a fine Christian man.
What position did you play?
I was a quarterback.
Well, I guess it's easy for a good quarterback to take over as a coach or what?
I think it helps, really, especially calling the plays. I call the plays. This helps a lot.
Do you call most of the plays?
Yes, sir. I call every play from the sideline.
Certainly, thanks to you, Don Whitey Smith. Now, this is Johnny Earp returning you to Monitor Sports.
Complete coverage of the world of sports every weekend on Monitor. The following word on behalf of the American Cancer Society. Every woman listening should realize that a special kind of life insurance is no farther away than her telephone. It's insurance that can protect her life against cancer of the uterus, the third most fatal cancer among women. The insurance? It's a simple, quick, painless examination called the Pap test. Make sure the Pap test is part of your next health checkup. Phone your doctor soon. For more information, call your American Cancer Society.
Thank you.
Bert Kempfert's orchestra. Stay with the Happy People. Every weekend, the Happy People listen to Monitor, available on NBC stations coast to coast. Near Prescott, Arizona, we're heard on KYCA. Station break time. We'll be right back. Professor Morgan here.
Monitor gets into the spirit of Halloween later today on the NBC Radio Network.
I laugh.
Oh, I thought it was Mark.
My husband is too.
I'm going to go see it again.
They're all talking about Harold Pinter's new hit play, The Birthday Party. It's at the Booth Theater.
Every day, TWA flies 7 nonstop jets to Los Angeles, morning, afternoon, and evening. Movies and music, too. Just call TWA. 52 degrees and sunny in the metropolitan area. This is The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. The time now is 2:30.
Music by Mancini on Monitor, the theme from Wait Until Dark. Here you got your Francis Albert, the chairman.
This town is a lonely town, not the only town like this. Is a make you town or a break you town and bring you downtown. This town is a quiet town or a riot town. This town.
In Southbridge, Massachusetts, there's a lady who's been practicing medicine for 59 years. She's 80 years old, and she has about 100 patients. In a few minutes, she'll talk with us and recall some of her early days as a doctor when her fee for an office call was 50 cents. Of course, nowadays, you're lucky if you can get a pill for that. This lady is Peggy Lee.
Stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid.
Filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. The 101, it's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
Many years ago, Dr. Ada Brown Eccleston of Southbridge, Massachusetts, who's now 80 years old, sewed up a wound on a man's head in her office. The man had fallen off a cliff. And the doctor says she'd never attempt that today. The man would be taken to a hospital. But Dr. Eccleston is still practicing medicine. She has a number of patients, some of whom have moved away from Southbridge, but travel long distances back to her office. She was interviewed for Monitor by reporter Joe Hyder.
Dr. Eccleston, they tell me that you refuse to talk about retirement. Is this true?
Yes, it's very true. It's been so many of my older people depend upon me. And I feel that as long as they live and as long as I'm able to, I must take care of them.
Dr. Eccleston, how many babies have you brought into this world?
Well, I think I've lost track, but it's somewhere around 1,000 probably. It may be more.
Okay, let's get it direct from you. How many years now have you been practicing medicine?
See, I graduated in 1908. So that's 59?
Almost 60 years.
Yes, 59 years. Almost 60.
Now, how did you get about? Of course, there were no automobiles back 1904, 5, and 6. Was it a horse and buggy?
That's what it was. I drove a horse. It belonged to my father-in-law. And I drove all over town and even to the surrounding towns. and it didn't bother me at all. He was perfectly safe. In fact, if I left him somewhere near home, he'd go home without waiting for me.
Didn't the riding of a horse in a buggy or a buckboard present any problems, Dr. Eccleston?
Oh, I had some troubles. I remember one time I left the horse tied to a telephone post, and when I came back, he'd got tired, and he laid down in the shafts, and we had difficulty getting him out because he was kind of tied up.
Kept you there a little longer than you expected.
That's right.
Doctor, how much of a fee, for example, would you have charged, say, back in the early 1900s, for delivering a baby?
Well, $5. And sometimes we didn't get that. A good many times. But $5 was the fee for delivering a baby in those days.
How much for a house call?
And for a house call, $1.
And suppose they came to your office, how much?
50 cents. 50 cents was all we got for an office call.
Were you always able to collect the fee from your patients?
No, I haven't been able to. In fact, one lady used to pay me with eggs, and I had to go in and get the eggs. She didn't deliver them.
No delivery.
No, that's right. And sometimes, of course, it was with vegetables.
Dr. Eccleston, you've seen many changes, both in medicine and outside of medicine, say in 60 or 70 years, or the 80 years you've been living. How does the world look to you today?
Oh, it's kind of mixed up. It is, certainly is. And I think it's hard to keep up with the world today because I have to have some social contacts, but you've got to stick to your medicine so close. And it's, if you don't have the social contacts, people wonder why. And I find it a very difficult world today.
And many of your patients expect you to care for them until the day they die, and I expect you will.
I expect they will. That's what they expect from me. They keep looking. They come in and they say, "Don't you die till I do."
This is Dr. Ada Brown Eccleston of Southbridge, Massachusetts, to whom it's been our pleasure to talk on Monitor.
Thank you very much.
Now this is Joe Hyder returning you to Monitor.
A lady very much to be admired for her courage at the age of 80. In a world she finds very difficult, she persists in serving. A pleasure indeed having her with us. Here, the latest ballad by Tony Bennett.
For once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me, and somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew. Someone warm like you. Would make my dream come true. Sorrow hurt me, not like it's hurt me before. Once I have something I know won't desert me, I'm not alone.
15 minutes before the hour. By the way, you did remember to set your watch back an hour today, didn't you? Of course, if you weren't on daylight saving time to begin with, forget it. You're on the monitor beacon. Monitor, Morgan, music by the Blades of Grass. Away, the director of the new film Far From the Madding Crowd, starring Julie Christie, who also, well, the director also directed Julian Darling. Never mind. Stick around for a couple minutes. First, this by Vicky Carr.
To hope and to dream.
101, the new filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. The 101, it's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
In the new film, Far From the Madding Crowd, Julie Christie plays the stormy heroine of Victorian fiction, Bathsheba, a vulnerable, eager, and resourceful woman. The director of the film, John Schlesinger, was convinced that Bathsheba is the closest character he knows to Julie Christie, or the other way around. So he took his cast to an English village, where life among the farmers is much the same as it was 100 years ago. Mr. Schlesinger talked about other aspects of the film with reporter Candy Jones.
Tell me, John, in making Far From the Madding Crowd, what were the major difficulties in translating the book to the screen? You had so many different characters and so many climaxes to contend with.
Yes, it was a big problem. I think one of the problems, first of all, is that it's a long novel and it's a very full, thick novel with many things happening in it. And it was a question, first of all, of being able to condense it without just merely telling a Victorian melodramatic story, making the people believable and the situations really happen as if they were happening, because climax after climax seems to be a melodramatic one, but that's what life's like, really, I believe. And we are involved at all times in strange acts of violence and suddenness of all sorts.
Yes. Well, I think you could almost go back to 1874 when Thomas Hardy wrote Far From the Madding Crowd, and with the people he had, find their modern-day counterparts.
I believe you can. I mean, we made this all on location for 6 months, mixing in a lot of local Dorset people from the Hardy country, and the pace, I suppose, is a little faster than it was because people have cars, but it still takes just as long to get a flock of sheep over a hill as it did then, you know.
Yes.
There's nothing faster in rural terms. But another of the problems was that there were very big sequences to do. I mean, how do you make it look as if a flock of sheep were falling over a cliff or were dying of some terrible disease in a field?
Could I ask you this, John? The sheep going over the cliff, which was terribly exciting and dramatic with the opening part of any film, although that is the way it was in Thomas Hardy's book, but were those sheep really, were they really dead sheep on the beach?
No, well, they were really dead sheep on the beach, but they weren't thrown over to be dead. I mean, we had to get some dead sheep from a slaughterhouse who were just automatically killed already, humanely,
yes,
and put them on the beach. But the impression of them falling over,
yes,
not one sheep was actually hurt or damaged in doing that.
Naturally. And, of course, I think when people do see Far From the Madding Crowd, when they see Alan Bates as Oak, saving the lives of the sheep, I've never seen that before. What do they call that procedure, puncturing the sheep?
The sheep sort of get blown up by eating the wrong sort of food. In fact, they should be eating clover, realistically. We planted a clover field, it never came out in time. So we had to really break a rule and do what, in fact, cows would have done, is to put them into a field of something that would have blown another sort of animal up into, you know, with just air inside the stomach, and that has to be released either or they die. And we had a vet on the set with us always when we were,
yes,
using animals, and he showed us exactly how they would have done it,
yes,
and how they do it now, in fact, by puncturing the sheep and letting the air and the bad juice out.
Well, I'm going to remember never to eat any clover myself. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Candy Jones for Monitor.
Our guest, John Schlesinger, director of the new film Far From the Madding Crowd. That title, by the way, was taken from Gray's elegy written in a country churchyard. Far from the madding crowd's ignoble strife, their sober wishes never learn to stray along the cool, sequestered veil of life. They keep the noiseless tenor of their way. I didn't know that till I read it just now. And from that, folks, we gently slide into something called Lapland by the Baltimore and Ohio Marching Band. Thank you.
Hey!
News coming up on the hour. Morgan here for Monitor.
Brad, this is Lee.
Yes, my boy, I can see.
Let's discuss.
Without fuss.
The way we handle...
calls for Crandall.
And for Leonard.
Splendid.
I mean...
oh, no.
I mean...
how so?
On the phone, I insult.
My dear boy. And the result?
May I call again?
Good grief. When?
Every day.
You don't say. Now, I'm nice.
No advice?
Oh, I'm nice.
That's twice.
On the phone, I'm polite.
My good man, is that right?
Well, they keep calling.
How appalling.
Every day.
What a way.
It seems clear to me.
We don't quite agree.
Ah, but I know.
On your show.
The caller's all clever.
Lee Leonard's glamour.
And Brad Crandall's wise, winning ways.
Listen to us on WNBC.
And call us at Plaza 78866.
Weekdays from 1 till 4.
Weeknights from 9 till midnight.
Dr. S.D. Klotz, author of A Guide to Modern Medical Care, is examined by Long John Nebel on The Versus Show, Monday at 8 p.m. on The Conversation Station, WNBC New York. It's 3 o'clock.